Devour the Podcast is for mature audiences only. Devour the Podcast.
Hello and welcome to episode 16 of Devour the Podcast. I'm your host, David, and this week we've got some kind of sad news. I forgot to introduce Jamie. Jamie's with me as always.
Hi.
So this past weekend we had, there was some trouble that went down in the comments, and as you may or may not have noticed, we have been removed from Horror Palace because of it. I lost my temper and swore at a listener who decided to pick a fight with me, and I acted unprofessionally. So, sadly, this will be the last episode of Devour the Podcast because we just don't want to go on anymore.
I can't bear it. It's too much.
Bullshit! We're not going anywhere. Fuck you guys. Fuck everybody who hates this show. We are not going fucking anywhere. Can you hear it?
Yeah. Okay,
so yeah. Bullshit. We're not going anywhere. And, yeah. Everybody who fucking wrote nasty emails saying I'm such an asshole and how I need to be kicked off the network, you can kindly go fuck yourselves because you've achieved nothing. You got me kicked off of one website. Oh, I'm so afraid. You know what you've done? Nothing. Because guess what? I still have a microphone. I still have a computer. I still have the internet. I'm still going to share my opinions. And if you don't like my opinions, you can continue to kiss my ass. Now, having said all of that, I do want to say, in all seriousness, there is no animosity between us and the rest of the crew at Horror Palace. This was a professional decision on Bill's part, and I respect that. I don't necessarily agree with his decision, but as a professional, I respect that. What happened was basically a listener, who I will refer to as Commander Ass Clown, didn't like my opinion, or our opinion, rather, of Mask Maker, and decided to act like a jackass about it. And I politely pointed out that our show is based on our opinions. And something I've said since day one, this show is about our opinions. If you don't agree with our opinions, don't listen to us. Apparently, pointing out the obvious to this guy is the equivalent of punching his mother or calling his mother a whore or something. Because he lost his fucking shit and went into a tirade about how I was a punk kid who knew nothing, yada yada yada, and admitted
snot-nosed brat.
Thank you.
And the spit shine in your mother's eye.
Ah, yes, thank. I really wish I had saved those that whole thread of messages because they were fucking hysterical. But I did something I shouldn't have done, which is I lost my cool and I fucking went off on the guy. I said, "Listen, you stupid." Well, actually, I didn't actually say anything rude to him. I pointed out the obvious yet again that our show was about our fucking opinions, and I defended myself, my show, and my co-host, because I don't give a fuck if you don't like my opinion. It's an opinion. There is no right or wrong. It's an opinion. Well, apparently the people who were commenting against me and sending all the hate mail clearly don't have the reading comprehension of a fourth grader, because they took my pointing out the obvious twice and defending myself and my show and my co-host as being a personal attack against this asshole. So it was a flood of you're despicable, you're deplorable, blah, 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 you should be thrown off the network, yada, 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 fine, fuck you all. Very, very special thanks to Wolfman and Dirty Girl for supporting me and coming to my defense on the comments there. I really appreciate that. But as I said, I emailed Bill about it Saturday and explained, you know, hey, I lost my temper. I'm staying out of the comments from here on out, whatever. And yesterday I get an email saying we're off the network. It's best interest of the network. And as I said, I don't personally agree with that choice. I would have rather, worked it out a little bit differently, but It's Bill's network. It's Bill's rule. And you know what? He's the boss, so it's his decision. But we're still going, because if the people who wrote all those hateful letters about how I'm so bad and how I should be thrown off the network thought that this was going to stop me, they're sorely mistaken, because all you've done is just emboldened me and made me want to do this even more, because I enjoy pissing people off because they don't like what I have to say. So very big thank you to Wolfman and Dirty Girl. You guys are both very awesome. And a huge thank you to Mike from the Corpse Cast, who I have been thanking profusely all day yesterday in emails for all the help he's given me. He helped us get the show back up and running. He's actually hosting our episodes now through his servers. So thank you, Mike, very much. Speaking of which, Mike will be on episode 18 to review Return to Sleepaway Camp with us and whatever he chooses for the instant cue selection. So that is awesome. Check out Corpse Cast. Hey. It's a great show. I really enjoy it. There's a lot of dick jokes, which I'm amazed at the amount of dick jokes he can fit into a 2-hour podcast. It's frankly amazing. So yeah, basically to all of our former co-hosting pals over at the Horror Palace, you know what? No hard feelings, guys. If you guys want to come on here and work with us, the door is always open. You know our Twitters, you know our email addresses. We're more than willing to let you guys come on. As I said in emails to Bill, no hard feelings, man. You did what was right for you and your business. I respect that. So that's about all I have to say about that. Jamie, do you have anything you want to say?
I would just like to add, you know, from me personally, that I loved everyone over there. The hosts are wonderful. I met some really great friends, and I loved working with all of them, and I'm really going to miss it. I am. It was a really fun place and lots of wonderful people, and you know, I'm sad that it had to end, but you know, that's the way it goes, I guess. And hopefully, you know, we'll get to work together with them in the future at some point, because I would hate to see that go away.
Exactly. And like I said, you know, I've always been someone who's very much open about my opinions of things, typically, and I am one who is going to defend myself and my friends and my work when I feel necessary. And while I probably could have handled the situation a lot better, and yeah, honestly, I probably could have handled the situation better, but frankly, the guy drew first blood, and I didn't appreciate his commentary. And so I, you know, pointed out point blank in my initial statement, as politely as humanly possible, because it's how I write every comment that I send to anybody, that this is about opinions. And if you don't like our opinion, that's fine. But when he decided to be, you know, Commander Asshole about it, I lost my temper. And I said, you know, this is our fucking opinions. You don't like it, don't listen. So whatever. I'm over it. Honestly, we're going to keep going and keep on doing a show, and you know, it's sad to see that we're not going to be, you know, working with a bunch of the guys over at the Palace now, but you know, like I said, if they want to work with us, they know our emails, they know our Twitters, they're more than welcome to come by, and we'd be glad to have them. So yeah, with all that said, let's go ahead and jump into the news.
Be quiet a second, will you?
It's 8 o'clock in Los Angeles. It's 9 o'clock in Denver. It's 10 o'clock in Chicago.
In Baltimore, it's 6:42. Time for the 11 o'clock report.
Here's Johnny!
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Game over, man! Game over!
All right, let's get on into the news. All news today comes from horrormovies.ca.
Yep.
And first off, I'll say that Amy Adams set to venture into dark places. Here we have a new upcoming flick based upon Gillian Flynn's critically acclaimed New York Times bestseller, Dark Places. And with that, we have landed some potential casting news. According to Deadline, Amy Adams is currently negotiating to star in the upcoming flick as the character Libby Day, with Gilles Paquet-Brenner, he's French, directing from his script. The film follows Libby Day, a woman who at 7 years old survived the brutal massacre of her family and testified against her brother as a murderer 25 years later, as a murderer. 25 years later, the Kill Club, a secret society obsessed with solving notorious crimes, bring her to question and confront the truth of what took place that day. Hmm. Sounds like an intriguing mystery.
It does sound kind of intriguing.
And Amy Adams is adorable.
Yes.
I like her.
What was she in recently that I'm drawing a blank on? Was she in The Muppets, or am I thinking?
Oh, I don't know.
I might be someone else. Anyway.
I don't know. She's cute. Well, you know, she and, other cute girl's name. Look so much alike. I can't think of her name, but she's cute too. Okay. All right. But anyway, it sounds like an intriguing little mystery there.
Yeah, I don't know when the book came out, because I've never heard of it until now. But sounds like it might be good.
Sounds like it. And I love when, you know, peppy little mainstream people pop over into like a genre film or a darker film, you know, and you get to see whether or not they have the chops for it. You know, that's to be fun.
Yes, she was in The Muppets.
Oh, good call.
Okay. I'll with the rest
All
of
right.
This.
Now we have two more added to the Carrie remake. Even more casting news today. Folks, this time for Kimberly Pierce's remake of Carrie, we have recently learned that Chloe Moretz was cast. Wait, we already knew that. Okay, as well as the lead, Julianne Moore, which, by the way, I don't think was confirmed when we had our last show and we were talking about the Carrie remake. But it has since been confirmed that Julianne Moore will be playing her mother. According to Variety, Alex Russell and Ansel Elgort are currently in negotiation to join the above-mentioned cast in the Carrie remake. There is no word at this time regarding their potential roles. Oh, okay. So they will be in there somewhere. We just don't know where.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe.
Glad that we finally got confirmation about Julianne Moore being Margaret. That's good to know.
Yeah, I'll be very interested. I mean, the more news that comes out about this remake, the more interested I'm becoming in it. Because, I'm really kind of liking the direction it's going. I love Julianne Moore. I don't know what she's going to end up doing with the role, but I'm definitely interested in seeing.
Yeah,
I'll put it that way.
Yeah, and we spent a lot of time on it last week, so I don't want to keep rehashing the same stuff. But I am excited about that.
Okay, next up, Isabel Furman lands leading role in Suspiria remake. Going on with another remake, and we've already shared our opinion about this remake too.
A couple episodes ago.
Yeah. David Gordon Green's upcoming remake of Dario Argento's Suspiria has scored its first piece of casting, and we have all the details. According to Variety, Isabel Furman of The Hunger Games and Orphan has landed the leading role of Susie in the upcoming remake. Now, for those who aren't familiar, Dario Argento's 1977 horror pick followed Susie, a young girl who travels to Europe to attend a world-renowned school, only to learn that the academy is a front for a coven of witches. David Gordon Green will be directing from a script he co-wrote with Chris Gebert. It's probably like Gebert.
Yeah.
And again, you know, David Gordon Green is known for like Pineapple Express, Your Highness, I think, Eastbound and Down, The Show. Basically, he's mostly a comedy guy.
Yeah.
So I don't know. And as we know, Suspiria is all about mostly about the senses. It's not really about the story.
Yeah, Suspiria is much more of a style over substance movie. I'm a little I don't know how old this girl is, the actress, because I didn't see Orphan, although I think that came out a couple of years ago, and she seemed fairly young in that. So, like I said, I have no idea how old she actually is right now.
I think she was like, don't quote me on this, but I want to say she was 15 when she made Orphan.
Okay. Yeah, I thought she was younger than that. So if she's doing, and that was like, what, 2009, I think, 2008. Okay. Because at first, because the picture I saw was of her from Orphan, and I was like, she looks really young. And her being cast as Susie, I'm like, that's really weird because she's way too young to be playing Susie, who's, you know, like in her early 20s in the movie, in the original Suspiria. But that makes a lot more sense now. We've already talked, like I said, like you mentioned, we already have kind of gone over our feelings about the Suspiria remake. I'll wait and see. I'll wait for a trailer to see if it catches my interest or not.
Yeah, I mean, that's really what all you can do these days is wait and see, because they're going to happen whether you want them to or not.
Exactly.
Okay, Mr. Hush scores U.S. distribution a new poster and trailer, which I
will be in the show notes.
You're going to have those? Okay. Mm-hmm. According to Deadline, Horizon Movies has acquired the North American rights to the flick, which will see a video on demand and DVD release this August 7th. Mr. Hush is written and directed by David Lee Madison and stars Stephen Geoffreys. Oh, wow. Brad Laurie, Edward X. Young. Oh, I know him. Connie Giordano, Alexis Laroon, Steve Dash, Thomas Churchill, Jessica Cameron. Oh, actress Jessica Cameron. Colleen Cohan, Mike Marino, and Tim Doherty. The synopsis is, horror icon Stephen Geoffreys, A Fright Night, returns to classic horror in Mr. Hush. Holland Price is a devoted husband and loving father. But unbeknownst to him, evil and darkness have him a marked man. An idyllic small Pennsylvania town serves as the background for this epic battle between good and evil, starring Brad Laurie of Halloween Resurrection, Steve Dash of Friday the 13th Part 2, and Edward X. Young of Sea of Dust. For more information, check out their official Facebook page and official website.
Both of which will be in the show notes. And since we are no longer on Horror Palace, you can go over to devourtheblog.wordpress. Oh, I'm sorry, no. Go to devourthepodcast.blogspot.com and you will be able to see the poster and such there, as well as on the Devour the Pod or Devour the Blog website, which is WordPress. However, the episodes or the feed comes from the Blogspot. If that anyway, doesn't matter. The only real issue I've had looking at this news story is the poster art that's online now is really they. Basically ripped off the cover of Trick or Treat. Like,
oh, wow.
The same color, the same style. Yeah, like everything. Yeah.
Ouch.
Yeah, that's...
Well, you know how close Trick or Treat is to my heart.
Yeah,
so.
That was kind of like when I first saw the poster, I was like, really? Like, it's not even like hiding it. That's like the same everything. You've got a character who's a focal point, and you've got the writing is the same, the colored background is the same. It just, yeah. So I don't know. I don't want to judge the movie based on that, but I think whoever's in marketing who did that, you know, is being lazy. But who knows? That, like I said, not passing judgment on it based on cover. Just saying.
It'll be interesting to see Stephen Geoffreys, you know, acting in horror again. Mm-hmm. You know, stepping out of the gay porn business. Which, hey, you know, you gotta eat.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not judging the dude. You gotta eat.
You gotta do what you gotta do.
But I'm glad to see him working in the genre again. That's good. Okay. Here, speaking of Argento, we were talking about him with Suspiria. Yeah. Here we go with his Dracula 3D. It's got a trailer.
It does.
Bloody Disgusting posted the official trailer for Dario Argento's upcoming Dracula 3D on Monday. The film stars Thomas Kretschmann, Marta Gastini, Rutger Hauer, Aja Argento, Miguel Angel Sylvester, and Miriam Giovi. You know what, people? Really?
A whole shitload of Italians.
If you're planning to be famous, just... Everyone should have the name Jones. That's all. You can also visit the film's official site, which will be in our show notes. The film is based on the original work by Bram Stoker. So that should be interesting. I mean, I'm not so into 3D these days.
You know,
it's kind of a pain in my ass, and it's really expensive to go see.
I watched the trailer, and it doesn't look terrible. And I actually had to severely edit that version of the news story, because both Bloody Disgusting and Horror Movie CA, well, actually, Bloody Disgusting was super snotty about it. Horror Movie CA was not as shitty about it, but it wasn't going to translate well into podcast news. I did watch the trailer. It's got some really dodgy looking CGI, like not quite as bad as the Stendhal Syndrome CGI, which was fucking atrocious, holy shit. But not great. It's great to see. It's good to see Rutger Hauer. I think he's playing Van Helsing in this.
Okay, I can see that.
But I don't know how I feel about the 3D. And there are some shots in the trailer that are obvious 3D. We're throwing shit at the screen to pop off scenes. But yeah, some of the CGI not so great. So I really don't want to, you know, just shit on this right out of the gate and say it's going to be a bad movie, because I do enjoy Argento's work. But as we've previously said, he is really hit or miss when it comes to his work pretty much after 1980 or so. You know, he's had some good ones, like Jennifer from Masters of Horror was really good. Pelts, not so much. Meatloaf was fine in it, but not so much. The movie sucked. So I will reserve my judgment of Dracula 3D until I see a copy, which will probably not be in 3D, because I can't think of the last time an Argento movie actually came to theaters. That wasn't like a limited.
Actually, you know what? That's true. That's a good point. In order for it to be in 3D, you would have it actually. Well, I mean, you know.
They could do a 3D.
A large release 3D. It'd have to actually come to theaters. And, you know, what theaters are going to do that on a wide release? Yeah. Not many. I mean, no one.
I mean, unless it gets picked up by, like, Miramax or something, or some other. Or the Weinstein Company, whoever the hell they are now. Or maybe Dimension or some other. Or Lionsgate, even. If it gets picked up by a U.S. company who will give it a wide release, it could hit theaters, but I kind of doubt it will. It'll probably be a direct-to-DVD thing like Mother of Tears was, which was fucking terrible. Ugh.
You know, I still haven't seen it. I'm still boycotting that movie. I'm running with Argento, yeah. And I'm like, grr!
You know, I
you'll pay! I will watch it.
When I initially was reading about it, and I heard that the team who had written the Toolbox Murders remake was writing it, I was like, oh, man, Toolbox Murders sucked. And sure enough, Mother of Tears, like, I couldn't even, like, I can justify the cheesy badness of Inferno to myself. Like, I can rationalize that movie to myself and say it's okay for what, it's good for what it is. I can't say that for Mother of Tears. It's just a fucking terrible movie with an anticlimactic ending.
I didn't hate Toolbox Murders.
Oh, I hated it.
You know, did you ever see the original with Cameron Mitchell? Yikes. It's bad. I have an old copy of that on VHS. And then when the remake came out, I was like, oh, this could be interesting because it's, you know, Toby Hooper and all. And Angela Bettis, who I enjoy. So I didn't hate it. I didn't. And of course, there's that little cameo from Sherry Moon Zombie in the very beginning.
Oh, damn it. That was something I forgot to put in the news. The Lords of Salem trailer is available, or a live. There's a video, I think, on Bloody Disgusting is where I saw, or I saw it on Facebook via Bloody Disgusting. There's a video from one of Rob's concerts relatively recently. And it's got a teaser trailer for his new film, Lords of Salem, which looks pretty fucking awesome, I gotta say. And then the rest of it is live concert footage for another, you know, 3 minutes or whatever.
Huh. Well, Sherry posted, she tweeted? Sherry tweeted some pic, god damn it. Sherry tweeted a picture today of her from the movie. So,
Yeah,
there's stuff there. You know, you can dig it up and look around.
Yeah, I'd been paying vague attention to Lords of Salem. As much as I know about it is that it's a Rob Zombie movie. It's an original Rob Zombie movie, and it's called Lords of Salem, and his wife is in it. That's about all I know. But the trailer looks pretty awesome. I'm very interested to see what he did with this movie, because I really enjoyed The Haunted World of El Super Bisto. I thought that movie was fucking hysterical. Completely inappropriate animation, but fucking hilarious anyway. So, and I'm not...
Really? I was so bored with
really?
That movie. Yeah, I didn't... There were parts of it where I was like, oh, okay. And then for the most part, I was just like, oh my God. I just felt like it dragged, you know. Maybe it just wasn't my thing, but I wanted to. And there were things about it I thought were really funny, but... When it was over, I was just like, whew.
Yeah. I
that's kind of the way I felt about, like, Nacho Libre, too. So, you know, which has, you know, maybe I just have a thing against Mexican wrestling.
You know, I was surprised. I didn't think I was going to like Nacho Libre because I fucking hated Napoleon Dynamite. I thought it was the stupidest shit I'd ever seen. And then I watched Nacho Libre and I was like, okay, I kind of like this because Jack Black is funny. And then I watched El Super Bisto and I'm like, this is ridiculous and awesome. So, whatever. But yes, Lords of Salem trailer is kind of available. Hopefully an official trailer will be released. It's supposed to come out sometime this year, I think. So I am interested to see that because I'm not one of those people who hates Rob Zombie for everything he's ever done. I just don't like House of Thousand Corpses.
Not at all. You know, I maintain that he made one of my favorite movies, and which is Devil's Rejects. I've loved that movie from the very beginning. Like the first time I saw it, I've been in love with that movie.
It's a good
and
fucking movie.
Everyone has their bad days, you know. Everyone has their bad movies. No one's gonna hit a home run every time they step up to play. But that, you know, so that absolutely doesn't mean that I'm not interested in anything else he has to do. I will always be interested in what he has to do.
Yeah, and as far as his Halloween movies go, I liked them for what they did. I think that for essentially being reboots to the franchise, considering, and this is one of those things that, you know, a lot of people get always up in arms about, oh, remakes, this and that, oh, they're the devil, et cetera, et cetera. When you really think about it from the perspective of, you know, the people who are in charge of these things, you kind of have to think, well, they want to make money off of this franchise, be it Halloween, Texas Chainsaw, Friday the 13th, Nightmare, whatever. But the public has an ingrained hatred of sequels. We've seen this with every time a new Saw sequel came out. All you saw on the internet was, oh, God. Not another Saw movie. And if they had promoted, you know, Friday the 13th as you know, Jason 11, people would have been like, oh, Christ, not another one. So it's a double-edged sword that it's like either you reboot the franchise and call it a quote-unquote remake, or you run the risk of throwing out another sequel that may or may not do well. Although the Halloween franchise did take a good idea when they did H2O and Resurrection by just dropping the numbering out of the title so people wouldn't realize it was 7 and 8. But like I said, for reboots of a franchise, Rob's Halloween movies weren't bad. I can't say the director's cuts were very good, especially the second one, because I don't know what the fuck was going on in that director's cut. You know, I'm willing to see what he's going to do. And, you know, I like I said, I do like Devil's Rejects. I just didn't like House of Thousand Corpses. But Lords of Salem looks pretty awesome. I'm not super crazy about Cherry Moon Zombie being in every fucking movie he does. But it's kind of like every Tim Burton movie has Helena Bonham Carter now. So it's just...
Well, you know, I don't care. I really like Sherry.
Yeah, she's
I think
not
she's
a bad actress, particularly.
I don't, you know, and it doesn't bother me. I actually like when directors use the same person a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, Tarantino does it. No one complains about that. And it just, I mean, Johnny Depp works with Tim Burton a lot. I mean, Tim Burton's really big on using people over and over again. Yeah. I think, you know, you become comfortable with people and, you know, it works out well that way. So she just happens to be his wife, you know. So what? Yeah. You know, she's still cute, and I don't think she's a bad actress. I don't care what anyone
says. No, I think she improved considerably from, like, House of Thousand Corpses. She was obnoxious. She was good in Devil's Rejects, and she got better in the two Halloween sequels. I thought she, like, you could see she was getting better as an actress, and so I can respect that about her. And I know a lot of horror fans are just like, oh, God, Shaman Zombie. But, you know, fucking everybody bitches about everything in the fucking horror community. So whatever. It's part of your... It's just, yeah. We've gone over that multiple times about how if you're going to bitch about something, you know, have a point and don't just piss and moan for the sake of pissing and moaning. So anyway, back to the original story of the Argento 3D trailer, which looks okay. I'm not going to hate on it yet. It's not out yet. It is what it is. I don't know if it's going to be any good, but Rutger Hauer's in it, and that's good. I like him. I like Asia. She's a good actress. She's a good director, too. Have you seen The Heart is Deceitful Above All Things?
I have not.
Oh, my God. That is the most depressing, fucking soul-crushing movie I've watched in a long time. Holy shit. We'll throw that on the list at some point for the not quite horror movie list that we'll do. Is that all for the news?
Yeah, that's
okay.
It.
We totally got off on a tangent that had nothing to do at all with the news, pretty much.
Yeah,
awesome.
We do that.
like I said at the beginning, folks, it has been a rough fucking weekend for us, and so we're kind of like spaced out a little bit. But really quickly, we're going to go into coming soon for next week's movies, and then we will jump into our feature, it came from the instant queue selection of The Hole.
We have just seen rushes direct from Hollywood of pictures being released in the coming weeks. Here's a glimpse of a few of them coming to this theater soon.
Before it came from the Instant Cue selection, we will be watching the film Slaughter Night.
Er liggen nog allemaal spullen van papa in België. Iemand moet ze halen.
Moeten we mee?
Nee, we moeten het even alleen doen.
U kunt met de tour mee door de mijn. Dat is interessant hoor.
Dames en heren, wij bevinden ons hier op 60 meter onder de grond. Het is hier een compleet labyrinth. Dus als je hier verdwaalt, dan krepeert je.
Hallo?
Ik zie dingen. Wat voor dingen?
We gaan geesten oproepen.
Is er iemand die met ons wil praten? Is er iemand die met ons wil praten? Wil je met ons praten?
Ik weet niet wat hier aan de hand is.
Fucking hell!
Schuld is. Next week's feature presentation will feature the lost film Sleepaway Camp for the Survivor.
From Grindhouse editor Jim Markovic, Sleepaway Camp for the Survivor, the long lost sequel. Reconstructed from archive footage and released from the vault. Relive the original nightmare. Sleepaway Camp for the Survivor.
It came from the Instant Cue.
How would you like to go to the best private party of your life?
Me, you, Mike, and Jeff.
Absolutely extracurricular.
All right, I'm in.
Oh, yes!
This was released in 2001. It runs about an hour and 42 minutes. It was directed by Nick Hamm, written by Ben Cort and Carolyn Ipp, based on the novel After the Hole by Guy Burt. And the synopsis is, four teenagers at a British private school secretly uncover and explore the depths of a sealed underground hole created decades ago as a possible bomb shelter. The stars Thora Birch as Liz Dunn, Desmond Harrington as Mike Steele, Daniel Brocklebank as Martin Taylor, Lawrence Fox as Jeff Bingham, and Keira Knightley as Frankie Smith. I had seen this, I want to say 2005, maybe 2006, around that time when I was working for one of the two Blockbusters I worked at. I happened to see this because it was at the store and free rentals, so I'd watch whatever I could fucking find. And really liked it then, which is why I brought it up for Instant Queue this week, because after last week's fucking atrocious boredom fest that got us thrown off the network. Oh my god, that's...
Of all movies,
of all
too.
The fucking movies to get thrown off a network for, it's fucking Mask Maker. Not Night of the Living Dead, not... You know, it's like, I could understand if I had shit on, like, Night of the Living Dead. Or if I'd shit on Texas Chainsaw, but fucking Mask Maker, come the hell on. Whatever.
Well, and I still maintain that movie is nothing but derivative and boring, and I don't care what anyone has to say. And you can say all day long that I don't know shit about slashers, but you're wrong.
Yes.
Because I do, and that is derivative.
Yes.
And if you don't know what that means, look it up.
Yes, exactly. That's probably what the problem was. You didn't understand what derivative meant. But basically, haters gonna hate, and Maskmaker can kiss my ass too, because the movie sucked. So, the whole. Overall, I really enjoy this movie. I didn't have the same reaction I did to it as I did the first time, obviously, because, you know, there's a bit of a mystery about what happened, because you're presented with these characters that are, you know, the movie starts with Liz looking fucking horrible, wandering down the road to the school, and we find out that she escaped this thing that happened, and now she's talking to doctors or a psychologist rather to find out what the hell happened. And it's the movie kind of unfolds that way. All of the actors are good. And Thora Birch is fine as her character, but her English accent is fucking atrocious. And it's one of those things where it's like, if she were playing an English character on, like, an American show, you could maybe ignore it and be like, oh, okay, she's got kind of a weird accent, but I guess it's English. It's an English accent, I guess. But when you put an American who's trying to do an English accent around actors who are actually English... They sound really, really bad. She sounded so not English, it hurt.
Oh, and you know what else? Quinn from fucking Dexter is in that movie. And he's got this, like, he's the American guy.
Oh, okay.
And he's got this, like, emo haircut. Yeah. And I was like, it took me a minute. So finally, it was like halfway through the movie, and I'm like, oh my God, you know who that is? And then after that, I couldn't see him but anything other than that. But that was kind of a surprise, because he seems a little old to me to be playing that character. Only I didn't notice anything weird about it until I knew who he was. So I guess he pulled it off.
Yeah, this was like 2001, so I'd say it was probably made about 2000 or so.
Okay, well, so, yeah, I mean, I guess take 12 years off where he is now and I can buy it.
But yes, we're introduced to these it's set at an English prep school for the most part. And Thora Birch's character, Liz, is telling the psychologist what happened when her and these and Mike, Martin, or, I'm sorry, not Martin, Mike, Jeff, and Frankie are all locked down in this bunker, basically. And they're going to have a party down there. And Martin's supposed to come back in 3 days to let them out. And then Martin doesn't let them out. And so she tells the story of what happened. We find out as the movie progresses that things aren't her version of the story that she tells at the beginning is not necessarily what actually happened. And I don't want to reveal too much because it's kind of an important part of the plot. Then you find out as the movie progresses what actually happened. But I really enjoyed this. I think the first time I watched this, the mystery is much more effective the first time you watch it, I think, when you don't know what's happening. Because it is a very much a surprise at the end when you go, holy shit! It's a movie I would call... It's one of those movies I would say kind of fits into the not-quite-horror-horror movies, because it's dealing with horror topics, but in a more traditional, quote-unquote, way that wouldn't necessarily be, you know, a regular horror movie, sort of.
Yeah, I mean, it's very dramatic. It's very character-driven. It's very... you know, I would think people who are hardcore horror fans, you know, if you just, you know, if you want the slash and gash, then you're not gonna care about it very much. but it's very story driven, and you know, it's interesting. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I thought it was. That's why I picked it. It's a very interesting story. It sort of fits into what could be called a psychological thriller, which is kind of one of those terms I fucking hate, because typically your psychological thrillers, quote unquote, are really just fucking horror movies with a fancy title attached to them.
Uppity horror films.
Basically. You know, because I consider, you know, Silence of the Lambs, I consider to be a horror movie. Just mm-hmm. It's a fucking horror movie. Seven is a horror movie. Cell is a horror movie. There are a lot of these quote-unquote psychological thrillers that are very much horror movies, but they're a little bit higher class, quote, you know, theoretically, so they're considered psychological horror or whatever. And this was something that you brought up last week about when we were talking about Sleepaway Camp 2, is that, you know, as the 80s ended and the 90s began, horror was a bad word and nobody wanted to make horror movies anymore. And
that's
so
right.
When Silence of the Lambs came out, it was being touted as being a psychological thriller, and it was one of the, mm-hmm. you know, it won several Oscars, I think. And it's sort of one of those things where it's like, you guys, you do realize that that's a horror movie, right? You can call it a psychological thriller all you want. You gave a fucking horror movie Academy Awards because of what it fucking was.
I mean, the guy peels off people's faces exactly. and wears them. You know, he splayed the one guy open like a moth. You can't, I mean, are you kidding?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, Silence of the Lambs is a movie about a cannibal psychologist and an FBI agent who is talking to said cannibal psychologist who's hunting a man who kills women to make suits out of them. No, this is not a horror movie at all, you stupid shits. So, basically, yes, Silence of the Lambs is a horror movie. The whole is in a similar vein in that it is much, like you said, much more story-driven, much more psychological. If you're offended by penis, you're shit out of luck, because there is some dick in this. You also see Keira Knightley's boobs, if you care, because they're just sort of there. They're there for like 3 seconds, and then you see cadaver boobs, which is creepy, because they're cadaver boobs.
There's not a whole lot of penis. I mean, there are a lot of them, but you don't get to see them, you don't like see them close up, no. So... It's
sort of there. It
it wouldn't be offensive, I don't think. It's a locker room scene.
Exactly.
You know?
The first time I watched it, or actually really this time when I watched it, because I had forgotten about that scene, I was like, oh yeah, this must have actually been like a European movie, because that totally wouldn't have happened in America. That would have been totally like not happened. We would have been like, the camera would have stayed up at like above waist level, you know, no penises. Penises are bad, but... Yeah, it's one of those things that I've noticed about European films. It's just like, oh, naked people. All right, whatever. Part of the story. Keep going.
Hey, and good on them for it. What is wrong with naked people? Nothing. Nothing.
So aside from Thora Birch's terrible fucking accent, she is actually, I personally think she's great in this movie. I know you're not particularly a fan of her, so.
I'm not a fan of her, but I am a fan of this performance. I think she did a good job.
So why don't you like Thora Birch?
I don't know. It started with American Beauty, and
which I've never, I still haven't seen that movie.
I just great movie. Oh my god! If you're a Kevin Spacey fan, it's a must see. But okay. It started with that, and I don't know. I think it's her face. I think her eyes are too small and close together, or something in it. I don't know. But I just
she.
And, she also seems to talk without ever opening her mouth, and that annoys me. But she did actually open her mouth in this movie. So that
was... Well, yes, because she was so busy trying to enunciate her terrible accent.
Maybe that's it.
I did notice while I was watching this that whenever she was crying, she looked like she was just laughing.
That's exactly the same comment that Patrick made. That's so funny. He's like, she needs to stop crying because she sounds like she's laughing all the time.
Yeah, she's serious, like, look at her face and you're like, this is supposed to be really an emotional scene because she's crying. But you're like, why is she laughing? She totally looks like she's cracking up.
You know, here's a fun fact about me. I busted out laughing at a funeral once. And I felt really bad. And it was a friend of mine, and I was 16 at the time, and a friend of mine had gotten killed, and the place was packed. I mean, just people were spilling out mm-hmm. of the sanctuary during this funeral, and everyone's really sad. Well, then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, this guy in the very back just blows his nose, and it's like one of those really loud honking blows, you know, and it just caught me off guard, and I just busted out laughing. And then I was like, oh shit. So I tried to cover it and pretend like I was crying, and I was just like, Well, then I had people like all around me putting their hands on my shoulder. They're like, it's okay, sweetie. It's okay. You'll be all right. And I'm just like, sweet. But I felt so terrible about it. It's just one of those things, you know, I couldn't help it, but yeah. There you go. I laugh at funerals.
Oh, shit. Well, so like I said, we can't really say a whole lot about this without giving away basically the entire story. But your rating, and would you recommend this?
Yes, I would recommend it. But like I said, if you are a horror fan and you want lots of blood and slashing and, you know, just straight up horror, then no, I couldn't recommend that to you. But if you are interested in a good story and good characters and a little bit of a mystery, then yes, I highly recommend it. And so my personal rating, I would give this a 3 out of 5.
Okay. Yeah, I would say I would definitely recommend this to anyone who enjoys a good psychological horror film that's more focused on story and character development. And I promise once it comes to an end, it totally pays off, because that ending is fucking awesome. I really enjoyed it. I'm gonna give it a 3, mostly because Thora Birch's accent is fucking horrible, but her performance is fine other than her terrible accent.
I really enjoyed Keira Knightley in this too.
Yeah, this was one of those few times that I can say that I've seen her in something that I didn't want to punch her in the face, because whenever I watch the Pirates movies, I just want to punch her because she's obnoxious. But in this one, she actually does a really good job of, you know, portraying a character and not being fucking obnoxious. I mean, her character is kind of obnoxious, but that's kind of the point of her character. So, yeah. But I, like I said, I think she was great in this. All the young people in this were really good. Martin, especially. I think he was fucking brilliant, and his role was far too small in this movie, but he was fantastic.
I agree that his role was too small. I enjoyed him a lot, yeah. And I wish that he had been in it quite a bit more.
Mm-hmm, definitely. So there you go, folks. The Hole, it is available on Netflix Instant Queue. It's worth checking out if you haven't seen it. And if anything, you'll get a laugh out of Thora Birch's terrible, terrible accent. So, with that said, let's go ahead and jump into our feature presentation, part 3 of our Sleepaway Camp retrospective, Sleepaway Camp 3, Teenage Wasteland.
And now our feature presentation. In November, Nelson Entertainment brings you Women with a Passion.
I know that in the next 3 days we'll get to know each other much better. When we all get together again, I promise it won't be the same.
Angela's back to slash last year's record. Last year's Camp Carnage was so much fun that Angela has decided to return for another season.
Whatever happened to Angela Baker?
Nobody knows.
When'd you learn to chop wood like that?
I've never chopped wood before, but I've chopped other things.
Those immoral young campers. When will they ever learn?
Nobody wants to go to a camp where everyone's been slaughtered.
What's your favorite, color?
Blood red.
How many have you killed this time?
Lots.
Kill me too. How are you gonna do it? What's it gonna be?
A gun. Like every time I go to camp, somebody loses their head.
This year, camp's a real killer. Angela is seeing to that. Sleepaway Camp 3, Teenage Wasteland.
Party all night, Teenage Wasteland!
Promoted with POP that includes theatrical-sized posters, Sleepaway Camp 3's video release is also being supported with advertising in major trade and consumer magazines like Video Business, Video Insider, Video Store, and Premiere Magazine. Pamela Springsteen stars, along with Michael J. Pollard and Tracy Griffith, in a film Daily Variety calls nasty but fun. Sleepaway Camp 3 Teenage Wasteland, rated R. Order cutoff date, October 31st.
Sleepaway Camp 3, Unhappy Campers. This was released theatrically in 1988 and hit VHS in 1989. It runs 80 minutes and is rated R. And the synopsis is, thanks to sleepawaycampfilms.com, and I actually forgot to get the body count for this. Welcome to Camp New Horizon, where an autumn retreat brings together a group of obnoxious rich kids and surly city thugs for an experiment in sharing. But when notorious transsexual psychopath Angela Baker joins the horny teens, she shares a lesson in butchery with axes, trucks, firecrackers, lawnmowers, and more. It was directed by Michael A. Simpson, written by Fritz Gordon, based on original ideas by Robert Hiltzik, starring Pamela Springsteen as Angela Baker, Tracy Griffith as Maria Holland, Michael J. Pollard is Herman Miranda, who was hilarious. Mark Oliver is Tony Dara, Darrera. Haynesbrook is Bobby Stark. Sandra Dorsey is Lily Miranda. Daryl Wiltshire, as Riff. Kim Wall is Cindy Hammersmith. Cliff Brand is Barney Whitmore, who we will talk about a little bit more in the spoiler section. And Kashina Kessler is Maria Cosgrove. So, as I've said previously in the other episodes we were talking about Sleepaway Camp, I wasn't crazy about this one. And I'd have to say my feelings have changed a bit about this one, having watched it again for this episode. I found myself, almost despite my memory of it, enjoying it a bit more than I had before. It's not as funny as part two, but there's still bits of humor in it, and it's not a great movie. I don't want to say it feels like an unnecessary sequel, but it feels like a rushed sequel, which, granted, it is, because they shot this one in part two back-to-back. There are some good performances, and Pamela Springsteen is great, again, as Angela. Michael Pollard as Herman is fucking hysterical. Bobby is one of the funniest fucking characters in this movie. He's such a stupid hick. I don't know, what do you want to say about this before we jump into the spoilers?
I will say that I do have some interesting things to point out. You know, of course, this was filmed in Georgia, too, because, like you said, it was filmed back-to-back with part two. Yeah. What kills me is, in the beginning, she's supposed to be in New York. And they make that clear because she's wearing an I Heart New York t-shirt. Yeah. So, you know, that, in case you were wondering. However, the bus that drives by is a freaking MARTA bus, and it's very obvious, and that's from Atlanta. So, and it's downtown Atlanta that they're filming in. Now, how you expect anyone to believe that downtown Atlanta is downtown New York is beyond me, but
If I hadn't known this was shot in Georgia, I honestly had no idea where these were shot at when I initially saw them, and it was one of those things where it's like, I get that it was supposed to be New York, but it obviously didn't look like New York. I was like, all right, this is probably, you know, like LA or something, just dressed up as New York. But that's hilarious. It's actually Atlanta.
Yeah, it is. And there's a big old MARTA bus just driving right over there. I'm like, wow, people, at the very least, people from Atlanta and people from New York are going to notice, mm-hmm. you know, which I just think is hilarious. So here's a tip for anyone. If you're filming a movie and you want it to take place in a certain place, but you can't, for whatever reason, film there and you're filming somewhere else, at least make sure not to have anything that's specific to the city you're filming in your film.
Right.
Does that make sense? Okay. Let's say I'm not going to film a movie that takes place in Florida and yet have a big shot of the Golden Gate Bridge.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's just my little tip there. I always thought that was hilarious, and I loved pointing that out because, well, I'm from Atlanta, so I thought that was, you know, hilarious. But anyway, beyond that, I mean, I think everything else is going to be pretty much
spoilers.
Spoilerific.
Yeah. So, before we jump into the spoilers, get a quick...
Except that I will say, this is my least favorite of the original trilogy.
Okay. So. All right, so rating and recommendation.
I recommend this film to completists. You know, if you enjoyed the second one, like I did tremendously, then you'll probably like this one okay. I don't hate it. You know, I do think it's fun. If it's on cable, I'll watch it. You know, I have the box set and I watch it every summer. Like I've already said many times, you know, it's still fun to me. It's just not quite up there. So I wouldn't recommend someone run out and buy this one on its own.
No.
But, if you like the second one, then go for it. You know, why not? As far as a rating goes, I'm going to have to dip fairly lower on this one, and I'm going to go with a 6 out of 10.
I would recommend this conditionally as one of those things that if you're a completist, and if you're, or you're, you know, if you're a completist like me, who wants to see every sequel in a franchise, despite how fucking terrible they can be, cough, cough, Hellraiser, I would recommend it. It's not a terrible movie. That honor still sits on Return to Sleepaway Camp. It's a different kind of sequel. So if you're going into this from Sleepaway Camp 2 expecting the same kind of balls to the wall, wacky blood and splatter nonsense, you're in for a shock, because this is totally not that movie. It's not bad. It could have been better. I think there were some good ideas, but it just didn't quite gel, this one.
Well, I feel like they put all their energy into the second one,
yeah.
And then by the time they got finished making that movie, there wasn't that much left energy-wise for this movie. And so they just kind of went through the... They just did it, you know?
Yeah.
I don't feel like there was as much fun, as much passion, as much... You know,
or focus.
Bigger, you know, right.
Yeah, and there's a couple of things I want to talk about once we get into the spoiler section that I think could have made this a lot better. I agree, this is definitely a 6. I mean, as much as I love the Sleepaway Camp franchise, as much as I love Part 2, I didn't hate this movie, and I didn't not like it as much. I was always disappointed by this one. This one started out strong for me, and then progressively just kind of goes downhill as it goes on, and I think part of that is because it was so heavily censored. There's almost no payoff to a lot of the death scenes, which is such a drastic comparison to the last one, where it was, you know, blood everywhere, and then this one is tits everywhere and very little blood. So it's a 6 out of 10 for me. I would recommend it if you are a fan of the second one, just because it's another chance to see Pamela Springsteen playing Angela. She's got some good one-liners in this one. It's got its moments. But I really feel like if they'd taken a break and released this a year later, or if they had shot this maybe a year later, just give them some breathing room between 2 and 3, I think it could have been a much better film.
Also, the characters are laughably stereotypical, you know, which, of course, I mean, they're basically caricatures, but they're way over the top. Like, you've got Snowboy, who is just... tweaked all the time. I mean, every second of every day. Yeah. I love that.
Riff the angry black guy. And...
Yeah, you've got, and then you've got the racist white girl from the suburbs or whatever. Yeah. And the
dumb jock Bobby, who is hysterical. And
yeah, you name it, they're there.
Yeah.
the Hispanic who is misunderstood.
Yes.
He's the Latin, you know, I mean, he's a tough guy, but he really has a heart of gold.
Yeah. Like I said, this is...
It's like the cast of, like, Dangerous Minds meet the cast of Head of the Class.
Yeah. This is a movie that has its moments, but like I said, it really probably needed a good year between it to give it a chance to breathe. It's kind of the way I feel about when I watch Halloween 4 and 5. I really enjoy 4, but 5 was right on the heels of 4, and it feels like it. There's just, they needed that break between before jumping into the next one, because when you rush these things into production, the movie suffers for it. So
it does. And then in turn, your fans suffer.
Exactly. So it is a 6 from both of us. Conditional recommendation. Do not know if you can get this by itself anymore. I think it might be out of print. I'm sure you can search online for it. So we will play the spoiler warning message for you, and we will jump back in with the spoilers in just a second. Warning, the following review contains spoilers. As we said, picks up more or less, I think this actually takes place a year after the second one in storyline.
I think so.
The first kill we see is Angela killing Maria, which is hilarious, with a garbage truck. And if you watch carefully, you can see the dummy's head pop off and almost fly away when the Maria dummy gets hit by the garbage truck. I thought that was hilarious. But Angela goes to Camp New Horizon, which also happens to be the same camp that we were at last year at Camp Rolling Hills, except now it's Camp New Horizon. It's this ridiculous experiment in sharing with, you know, a bunch of...
The laziest woman I've ever seen in my life.
Yes, Lily Miranda. And I kept hoping as I was watching the movie last night, I was like, damn, they really missed out on a good joke. They could have called her Carmen Miranda, and I would have laughed hysterically. Anyway, it's... like I said, it's not a great movie. It's not really terrible either. It's just sort of there. It's like we've got these two groups of kids. We've got the obnoxious rich kids, and then we've got the kind of more likable, barely more likable street kids. And we've got Angela, of course, is hanging out with the street kids. And Barney Whitmore, who, for those of you who remember from part two, Sean Whitmore is Sean's father, the cop, who was referred to in the second movie.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a subplot I'll talk about in a little bit. So we kill off Maria with the garbage truck, which was fucking hilarious. And we get that great shot of the graffiti on the wall. It says Angela's back, and then the screaming guitar and fucking whatever heavy metal song that was that plays for Teenage Wasteland to open. And I'll give this one credit. There were some interesting deaths in it. The reporter she kills at the beginning with the cleaning solution that she tells is Coke, which was hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
That one was good. And
there's the lawnmower.
The lawnmower death, which is really disappointing.
It is disappointing. You get no payoff on that. Yeah. And I, every time, I'm just like, ah, damn it. You know, it's like I feel the way I feel when I'm watching Friday the 13th Part 8. And, well,
oh, yeah.
There are so many reasons to hate Friday the 13th Part 8 as much as I am Team Jason. and I love him. But in Part 8, there's so many missed opportunities for some really good splatter, and you get nothing. Yeah. And like there's a scene, well, I don't want to go off on a tangent about that, but there's a scene in an alley where he's killing a drug dealer, and he just kind of stabs him in the back. What you really want in that scene is a spine pull, like from Predator. You know, I want him to go ripping his spine out. You know, it's something like that, because this guy is really nasty and he deserves it.
Yeah.
And nothing, you know, so that's the way I feel when I watch this movie. It's just like, why? Give us more, you know. Let me see the carnage that this lawnmower causes.
Yeah.
But, you know.
And from what I understand, this one was heavily cut by the censors to get the R rating because the last one got away with so much.
Right.
And I kind of feel like that seems to be the story of a lot of horror movies towards the end of the 80s was that...
Well, yeah, it's like you said, horror was becoming a really bad word,
and suddenly if you wanted an R rating, they were cutting out everything. You could not have blood. So we went from movies in the early 80s having pretty good blood to, you know, all out splatterfests to stuff like this. And like you said, Friday 8, where all the scenes that there's payoff are cut out. And especially in Friday the 13th Part 7, which I love, so many of the gore scenes are cut out, and John Buechler has said on record that he is pissed about that version of the movie because it's so butchered.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I mean, if you look even on into the 90s, Scream even suffered from some of that. You know, the Casey Becker's death in the very beginning. If you watch the director's cut versus the theatrical version, you'll see you didn't get to see the guts roll out in the theater. That was severely edited. If you watch the DVD version, then you get to see, like, when she sliced down the middle, you get to see, in her parents' finder, you get to see the guts just come spilling out, you know, and onto the ground. And it's a beautiful piece of gore.
Yeah.
You know, well done. You know, it's not crazy, but it's, you know, it's nice. It adds a touch of nasty.
Yeah.
Well, but it was heavily censored, you know, and I'm like, really? Because it wasn't that bad. You know, I mean, it's guts, but it... In my mind, if you know what he's done to her, then seeing it is not that much worse. You know, I just can't stand censorship anyway.
Yeah,
so.
I'm very much against censorship. And I've always, it's a fairly well-known fact that the MPAA is wildly inconsistent in their ratings and how they rate things. And it's unfortunate that they come down so hard on horror films the way they do. But that's kind of the upside of the unrated DVD that's come out now, is that you can get all of whatever you want into your movie and put it out there on DVD so people can see it the way you intend it. Unfortunately, that wasn't really an option back in the 80s. I mean, you had VHS, yes, but uncut VHS was kind of rare as far as I can remember from seeing from the 90s on. Like, that was like a special
edition.
You're just
a snot-nosed brat. What do you know?
Yeah, no, exactly. I can't possibly do research on the internet. Well, yeah, the death scenes are all right. Really, my biggest complaint initially when I'd seen this movie previously was that, and I mentioned this in the previous episode, was that I was like, well, why didn't they use the footage from part two instead of reshooting that scene where Angela has the weird dream sequence thing where she's remembering the Happy Camper song?
Mm-hmm.
And when I watched it this time, I don't know why it didn't click with me till just this time. But I was like, oh, of course they're not going to reuse that footage, because in that footage they were all kind of being goofballs about it. And this one, they're actually like cheering her, and this is her dream of her being accepted by the kids. So it's like, ah, that makes more sense now. Really, the story is only done. It's like they have the three groups, and it's basically she kills off the kids in one group and then moves on to the next group and then on to the next group. And there's really no development of any of the characters beyond a name and an initial here they are stereotypical thing. And with Barney Whitmore, we had a chance. And there are some flourishes the very early on where he's talking about his son being murdered by Angela. That they could have done something more with that subplot, but instead he just gets shot like halfway through the movie, and that's it.
Yeah, that subplot just went down in flames.
Yeah,
and
like a lot of this movie, it just what happens, and you're like, okay. And like I said, there's parts of it that are good. There are parts of it that could have been better, but I feel like in perspective of having seen Return to Sleepaway Camp, this is far from the worst of the franchise and actually is bumped up a bit because of that, but it's not very good.
Man, I cannot wait to see how bad that movie is. I mean, I'm holding off. Like, I've been wanting to watch it ever since we started this retrospective, but I'm purposely waiting until right before we do that show, and I am dying. I cannot wait.
Yeah. And I'm excited to watch The Survivor, which from what I've heard is basically, unfortunately, it's just, from what I've read, is just footage from the first three movies spliced together with the half hour of footage that was shot that was, you know, never completed into a movie. So we'll see how that goes. Luckily, it's only going to cost us $1.99 to rent it from Amazon. So, that's what we do for you folks, because we love you, and we want to make sure that you know that we give you a full retrospective on this series.
That's right. I spend $2. So you better appreciate
$2 to rent a shitty movie just to complete a retrospective.
Because we're thorough like that.
We are, exactly. I mean, we could have, honestly, if we had done this prior to Survivor being released, we probably would have just done a quick little side note about that disc that's in the box set. But since it's actually been released in whatever it is now, we're going to do it. So overall, for these two, for this one and part two, because I do feel like these are kind of their own side, within the franchise, they are their own kind of side thing. I like Pamela Springsteen as Angela. I think she was much more fleshed out in this one. We got much more. We got to see a little bit more of her being Angela, as it were. But I feel like this really is kind of a franchise that could have been better as far as this one. As far as this one's concerned, this one could have been way better. They'd waited a little while and just knocked it out the next year. But I understand, you know, it's easy. It was probably cheaper to shoot them back to back, and they knocked it out of the park with the second one. The second one was great. They, you know, clearly had a great cast and really put a lot of effort into it. This one, not so much. You know, there are some funny moments to it. There's some good dialogue occasionally, but all the death scenes are very neutered. The story is shaky at best. Some of the acting's okay. Some of it's kind of bad. But yeah, it's, if this had been the end of the franchise, which it was for a very long time, it was a disappointing end to the franchise, frankly, because for, God, almost 20 some odd years or so, a little bit less, a little bit more, it literally, the franchise was Sleepaway Camp 3 Unhappy Campers. That's it. You know, we didn't have any access to Survivor other than, you know, pictures and hearsay. And then Return to Sleepaway Camp came out in 06, 7-ish, something like that. I don't remember exactly. I'll have to look that up again. But this is not the way you want to go out on have your franchise end by any means. I mean, yeah, you can say Jason Goes to Hell is not great. Personally, I enjoyed it. I think it's a pretty good movie. But I feel like the other big franchises of the 80s had good final acts. They had, you know, we had Final Nightmare, Final Friday. Child's Play 3 was a pretty good ending for that franchise until it was resurrected with Bride of Chucky. But this one feels like they wanted to do more. And if Survivor had actually been made, maybe they could have done more. But it's just what it is. It's not very great. This one just sort of leaves you hanging and kind of hoping that there'll be more, but then nothing. Nothing for 20 odd years until Return of Sleepaway Camp came out, and then so, like I said originally, it's a 6. It's okay. Pamela Springsteen is apparently a photographer now.
Really? I did not know that.
I looked it up on her IMDb. She is apparently a photographer now. I'm kind of hoping that if Michael Simpson does get Berserk made, I really, really, really want, ideally, I want Pamela Springsteen to come back for that little bit as Angela. Marsha, I think? Yeah, I think it was Marsha. Anyway, I want Renee Estevez to come back for that little bit, and I want the girl from this one to come back. Is it going to happen? Probably not. Maybe. You know, we can hope, but who knows. And apparently, Hiltzik is working on Sleepaway Camp Reunion, and I don't want to sound like an asshole, because I'm going to tear Return to Sleepaway Camp apart when we get to it, but I'll give him this much credit. His heart was in the right place. He didn't make a very good movie, but his heart was in the right place, so that's really all I have to say about Sleepaway Camp 3.
Well, I mean, there's not a lot that I can add to it. It's pretty much just what you said. I mean, there's a lot of setup and not a whole lot of payoff. Some stereotypical characters. Mm-hmm. You have some really potentially fun death scenes that really kind of fall flat.
And I can't really blame that on the filmmaker.
No, not at all. It just is. But that's the product that we end up with. And that's really all we can judge, yeah. You know, whether or not it's their fault, that is the end. It's the end product. Right. But, you know, so sadly, I think it could have been a lot better. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, with this type of slasher film, what you don't have in substance, you have in, you know, slashing.
Yes.
And this one was kind of missing both.
Yeah.
Which is sad.
Yeah, that was kind of the thing about the second one, is that it made up. The writing was kind of terrible. The acting was kind of terrible. But it made up for it in charm and buckets of gore. And
right. I mean, we got a lot of shit for praising it as much as we did and loving it as much as we do. But the thing is, that, you know, it had everything I like to see in a slasher movie.
Exactly.
It had slashing. You know, what more could you ask for? And no, it wasn't a great movie. I mean, I'm not going to put it up against Gone with the Wind. Yeah. But, I mean, it's... You know, it was fun,
mm-hmm.
You know, and sometimes you just want to have fun, especially when you're watching a slasher. What's the point?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're supposed to be fun. So, you know, that one had it in droves. This mm-hmm. one, not so much.
Yeah.
Not so much. It just dipped a little bit below and had a lot of potential, but didn't quite make it.
Yeah.
So,
and I think it's kind of unfortunate because, you know, it did have potential and there are elements that you can see and go, wow, this could have been so much better, but it just kind of all falls flat in the end. It, like I said, it starts out good, and it starts out with some pretty good momentum, and then it all just sort of falls apart as it goes down, as it progresses. It's just like, fuck, okay.
Yeah, it does have some, you know, some interesting characters that are funny to make fun of. I mean, like, what's her face and her husband.
Yeah, exactly. The Mirandas.
Right, and Snowboy, and, you know, I mean, like I said, they're all very stereotypical in a laughable way.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
You know, you do get some laughs out of it, you know.
Yeah, and I that was kind of my feeling was as I was watching it. I was like, this is kind of funny. And not just, you know, oh my God, this is bad funny, but actually genuinely there were some funny things about it. But that goodwill that I started watching it, and I was like, this is kind of funny, this is kind of fun, you know, Sleepaway Camp 3. No, I was still... I guess I was riding high on just a sense of I enjoyed the second. I had so much fun rediscovering the second one that coming into the third one, I was like, oh, wow, this isn't so bad. And then that goodwill just starts dropping off so quickly as the movie progresses, because it's like I knew that it wasn't as good as the second one. I knew it wasn't going to be as good as the second one. But I kept thinking, oh, maybe this time it'll be different. And no. No, it's still not particularly very good, but it's okay.
Hey, if nothing else, you can enjoy the box art.
Exactly. So that's about all we have to say about that movie. We will be back in just a second to close out this week's show.
Angels are pretty, angels can fly, and here is an angel that can make you die. You've got no style, you've got no flair. All you do is fight and swear. So say your prayers and make amends. because your life story is about to end.
So, that is it for episode 16 of Devour the Podcast. I would like to say thank you to all of you who are listening, all of you who were supporting the show, following us on Twitter, like the Facebook page. The contact information is at the end of the show. If you want to leave comments, you can leave them on either the iTunes store thing. I can't remember what the fuck it's called off the top of my head for some reason. Or leave comments at devourtheblog.wordpress.com or devourthepodcast.blogspot.com. Either one, you can leave comments on and I will respond to them because we no longer have a dedicated network to have comments at. Once again, thank you so much to Midnight Corey. He deserves thanks, but I'll thank him later for other things. Thanks to Mike.
That sounds questionable.
I know, right? That did sound really questionable. Anyway, thanks to Mike for being so helpful. And thanks to Midnight Corey too. He's been super helpful the past couple days, just helping get, you know,
Corey's a doll,
helping us out with stuff. Yeah. And Mike, who has, like I said, has the patience of a saint. He helped me yesterday because I was so frazzled yesterday with the whole everything and then trying to get the feed reset up with FeedBurner and fucking everything. It was a nightmare. But yeah. So next week we will be doing, as you heard in the coming soon, we'll be doing Slaughter Night for our instant queue and the recently released Lost Sleepaway Camp film, The Survivor. Which, if you would like to watch it, you can rent it from Amazon for $1.99. If you want to throw down, I think it's like $13.99 for an actual copy of it, you can buy a copy. But I'm going to rent it first, because as much as of a collector and completist as I am, I hated Return to Sleepaway Camp so much that I wouldn't buy it for ridiculously cheap when it was available at a closing Hollywood video store. And I had to debate if I wanted the free copy that we were getting rid of when my border store closed, because we had a screener copy. And I was like, do I really want to take this? And one of my coworkers was like, dude, it's free. Just fucking take it. I was like, but it's a shitty movie. I don't like it. But I took it anyway. And that one is available on Netflix Instant Queue. So when we get to episode 18, you can watch that along with us and suffer along with us. So that's it. Contact information's at the end of the show. Jamie, any final words?
No, thanks to everyone who is hanging in there with us. I appreciate the support, and I appreciate all of our listeners. So
yes, thank you to everybody who's sticking with the show. We appreciate it, and I'm sorry if things got a little hairy there with the feed. I know, things were a little hairy there for a second, but
we're getting it sorted.
We're getting everything sorted.
And, you know, hit us up and let us know you're out there.
Yes.
You know, email us, follow us on Twitter, whatever, but let us know you're around.
Yes, yes.
We like to hear from you.
Yes, we do. And I'm not super active on Twitter, but I am periodically popping up now and again on Twitter. I will respond if you tweet at me. I do try to respond to everybody who tweets at me. I will respond to your emails if you email me, because I do respond to just about every email I get.
I respond to everything.
Yes. So, as I said, you know, thank you to everybody who has helped us, you know, get things sorted back out after this, you know, disaster. Thank you to all of you listeners who are sticking with us. I very much appreciate it. I appreciate it beyond anything I can say. And thank you to everybody who was, you know, gave kind words this weekend. It meant a lot going through this nightmare. So that's it. We're going to go, because I have stuff to do. Video games, Skyrim, editing. Fuck, I have so much editing to do. So we'll be back next week, folks, with Sleepaway Camp 4. Bye!
Bye. See you then.
If you wish to contact Devour the Podcast, you can email us at CenobiteDave@gmail.com. That's CenobiteDave@gmail.com. Or Maven1974@gmail.com. You can reach us on Twitter at DDelamorte. That's @DDELLAMORTE or @Maven1974. You can reach us on Facebook at facebook.com/devourtheblog or visit the site at devourtheblog.wordpress.com.